the move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolph fans, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we continue our draft preview series with a couple of heavy hitters. Dane Brugler from The Athletic joins us to break down the tackles, and my good buddy Dante Colonnelli helps us kick inside on the interior offensive line. From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is the Drive Time Podcast. Let's kick it off with my first guest, talking offensive tackles and his mock draft up on The Athletic. All seven rounds for your Miami Dolphins and every team across the National Football League. From The Athletic, Dane Brugler. Thrilled to be joined today by the author of The Beast, the best draft guide in the game, if you ask me. He's Dane Brugler from The Athletic. Welcome in, Dane. And I begin with this question because I am dying to know the process behind The Beast. Do you start with the tape, then get to your background? Is it vice versa? And then if you had to count them, how many cumulative hours do you think you put into The Beast every year?
Maybe asking my wife would be a better way of gauging that. It's a nonstop fact-finding mission. It really is. And it starts 18 months ago because, you know, like right now, I'm not looking to the 2025 draft, but I can't help but pick up some random info. Whether, you know, maybe I'm talking to a player or a coach or a scout, and ultimately something comes up about a player for next year. And so I'm making these notes, and, or I'm watching tape and, hey, who's this number 12? Oh, he's a sophomore. Okay. Someone I might be looking at next year. And so I'm making these notes and, you know, it just builds over time. And by the time we get to the finish line, you know, we've got these comprehensive reports. And so it's just, it's a matter of, nonstop talking to people, watching the tape, just trying to find the best way I summarize it is there's all these puzzle pieces out there, and it's my job to collect as many puzzle pieces as possible. And then some of these pieces are those, you know, a big corner piece that's so important to the overall picture, but just to make sure I get all the puzzle pieces I can, because when you put it together in the report, it's the most clear picture of who this guy is as a person, as a player, who he's going to be at the next level. So yeah, it's a exhaustive process, but yeah, I tell you, when I release it and it's available for everybody, it makes it all worth it to hear all the feedback and how much people use it and get out of it. And so even though it is a beating, it does make it all worth it.
I always say that in this industry, in this world, that feedback and just kind of some of the, you know, general praise for a job well done, it goes a long way. I mean, I've been there several times where I've had these long series where it's just like, when is this thing going to end? And it does. And you get some love and some feedback. And like you said, it makes it all worth it. Do you have your vacation plan for post-draft yet? I feel like that's got to be an annual thing for you.
Yeah, well, I do make sure and take the month of May to kind of recharge. No vacation, but I just look forward to just mowing my lawn. You know, like I've got over an acre of land here. I look forward to that and coaching my son's baseball team, my daughter's softball team. Like that's what gets me kind of just relaxed and, you know, a chance to just take a deep breath. But then, yeah, once June 1st comes, it's right back into it.
Well, you are in good company here as far as a man of a certain age on this podcast. I am right in that same wheelhouse, my friend. A nice cold one on a summer day and mowing your lawn.
There you go.
Tough to beat that. But we didn't have you on here to talk about mowing our lawns and how much time you put into the draft process here. I want to talk about the actual draft itself. So let's go ahead and dive right in to perhaps the best position group in the entire class, the offensive tackles. We'll do interior offensive line with my next guest here in just a second. But I want to go ahead and start here with Dane, because the Dolphins have their starting tackles for 2024, right? Teron Armstead. Instead, we don't know how many more years he'll play beyond this one. It could be this one. It could be multiple years. Who knows? They also have Austin Jackson there at right tackle, who just got a contract extension too. So Miami, I think, is certainly in play to add somebody there. My question to you to start this thing off is, how many of the tackles do you think are gone? How many guys do you think are completely out of the equation by the time Miami comes up at 21 to make their selection?
That's an interesting question, because I we're going to see several of these guys off the board. It's just, yeah, how many? I think it's, obviously Joe Alt be gone, Notre Dame left tackle. A good chance JC Latham from Alabama, Talise Fuaga from Oregon State, Olufoshinu from Penn State, and let's say Troy Fountainu from Washington. Let's include him in this mix, even though some view him as a guard. So that's six tackles right there that I think will be off the board in the top 20 picks. And then it's a question of, okay, who's Amarius Mims, Guyton, Tyler Guyton, do they go sneak into the top 20, into the top 22, or are they more in the mid 20s? So we're going to see these guys fly off the board. We might even see some of the interior guys like a Graham Barton sneak in that top 20 as well. So it's going to be a very offensive line heavy first round, very offensive period. Heavy first round. We're in my mock draft, my seven rounder that just dropped on The Athletic, I had 21 offensive players, and we've never seen 20 offensive players drafted in a first round. So we're going to see this very offensive heavy first round, and those tackles are going to play a big part.
So you talk about the Amarius Mims, Tyler Guyton, a couple of guys that you think might be available there. I'm curious because, and you know, it's funny how the draft shakes out every year. We have these rankings, and for you, Dane, like you do this in the sense of like for commercial, right? For like a fan of the draft that wants to take a look at all 32 teams, but every team has their own individual way they do this. And for the Dolphins, I mean, it's Chris Greer talked about it earlier this week. Like we have the style of play we play, and we need the guys that fit that style of play. And it's pretty clear on the offense. Offensive line, it's good 10 splits, guys that fire off the snap, guys that can get out in space and make blocks outside of the numbers and be able to really emphasize the Dolphins wide zone play action concept that marries up together. So with that in mind, I know Amarius Mims is an athletic marvel, has some injury concerns that go back, you know, a couple of years. You talked about Tyler Guyton. I'm just curious, which guy do you think that could be available at that spot 21? Maybe it is Troy Fontenot, like you mentioned, UW. I think his game is really fun. But who do you think could possibly be available there that fits that idea of explosive athlete on the edge, a guy that can do a little bit of what they want to do here in Miami?
Yeah, Mims and Guyton, those two guys, talking about who realistically could be there and guys that fit what the Dolphins are looking for, they're very interesting. And especially, I don't think anyone looks at the Dolphins and say, okay, well, they need to draft an offensive tackle in the first round. Like, I don't think anybody looks at it like that. But if maybe their options are wiped out at that point, and they're picking at an interesting spot where they might only have one or two true first round grades left on their board. And so do you go with that first round grade, even though maybe it's not an immediate need, over a second rounded graded edge rusher or whoever, whatever position they might view as the bigger need? So that plays into this as well. With Mims and Guyton, you've got guys that are physically impressive. I mean, Amarius Mims, 6'7", 3/4", 340 pounds. I've never seen a 340 pounder look like him. It is very clean. There's no sloppy weight. It's really impressive. And then, okay, 11 inch hands, over 36 inch arms, almost 87 inch wingspan. This guy is a marvel, and you love the traits. You love the size. You don't love the body of work. 8 career starts. And I think there's a big difference between inexperienced and raw. I don't think he is raw. I think he's inexperienced. So to me, that's an encouraging sign, because you go back to the first game he ever started against Ohio State in the college football playoffs last year, and he was outstanding. He played really well against a good opponent. And now, of course, you wish he would stay on the field. And, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily you're worried about him staying healthy. I didn't think it was just more freak injuries. He had the ankle injury, and he was waited his turn to see the field. So I don't know that I'm as much worried about the durability as I am just the inexperience and how long is it going to take before I'm comfortable putting him out there on the field and trusting him to get his guy blocked. But you're very encouraged by the traits. And so for a team like the Dolphins that maybe don't need a guy from day one, they can develop him at his own pace. He makes some sense. And same thing with Tyler Guyton. He's a similar size, just maybe not carrying as much weight, but he's 6'7¾". He's 325 pounds, has over 34 inch arms, 82 inch wingspan. But you love the Tyler Guyton tape where he's out in space. Use him as a lead blocker, whether he's pulling short pulls, long pulls. If you're a safety, the last thing you want to see is Tyler Guyton barreling down on you. And you know, both these guys, it's interesting, they're right tackles. I think they have the athleticism and the ability to play left tackle, but we just don't have that body of work to pull from. And so this is why you pay your offensive line coaches all that money to evaluate that first and foremost, to, you know, during these meetings, during the pro days, during the personal workouts, to figure out, okay, can they play left tackle? And then once they get them onto the practice field, actually developing them and making sure that they can play left or right and be interchangeable at the offensive tackle position. So these two players are really interesting because they have the traits, just and all the talent and all the traits in the world, just maybe not the consistency, but will that come with more experience? There's a good chance it does, but of course that's not guaranteed.
And that type of risk is why you have the potential of getting them in that range, right, in the 20s. Because if Amarius mm-hmm. Mims had 4 years of college tape, but the way he's built and the way he looks and the way he plays, exactly. he's not going outside the top 10, maybe in top five with the way he's built up and just looks like a potential, you know, dynamite grand slam at the back end of round one type of draft pick. And you kind of answered my next question I had for you. There was the idea of, you know, because I always love, you know, going through the scenarios, Dan, and kind of trying to figure out how the draft might play out. And sometimes when you have a group that is that deep, you can get guys that fall and drop. And just looking at the Dolphins, you know, current draft capital, I want to get to your seven round mock here in a second, but you know, they have that big gap between pick 55 and 158. And so I'd love to get back into that range and add a pick. Do you think that there's a guy that they could possibly target in a trade back scenario? Is it Guyton or Mims that they could then also recoup a mid round draft pick for? Like, who's kind of the next tier of tackles if the Dolphins move back in that between 21 and 55 range?
Yeah, and this offensive tackle class gets a lot of attention because it's so top heavy. But I don't love the depth this year at the position. I think it is a position where you want to get your guy early. And if you don't get him in the first round, you're not going to love your options in the second round. I think you'll like some of these guys, but you're not going to love necessarily the amount of guys that are left for you. So you have to get your position early if you want that offensive tackle. So after the first round, if we're looking and say that early to mid second round, we're talking about Kingsley Suamatia from BYU, really talented, but it's going to take a little bit of time. There's going to be a big development process for him. Patrick Paul from Houston, 6'7.5", 330. You love the length, over 36 inch arms, but he's an example of where the length kind of works against him, because if he misfires with that punch, it takes him an extra half beat to pull those arms all the way back and get his guy blocked, reset. So, Roger Rosengarten from Washington is also in that mix. Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. There are some quality, talented tackles on day two, especially in that second round. But, kind of like what you were talking about with Mims and Guyton, you know, if they're available in the 20s, it's for a reason. Same thing with these guys. If they're available in the second round, it's for a reason, and you're sacrificing something. And in most cases with these guys, it's because it's just going to take time, and it's more of a projection for them at the next level. So now I do like in the third round, I really like Kieran Megageji from Yale. He's a inexperienced raw player, but I love where he could be 3 years from now. Caden Wallace from Penn State, he'll be in that third, fourth round mix. He's a really consistent player. Some teams really like Javon Foster from Missouri. He'll be also in that fourth, fifth round mix. So even though this isn't a super deep class at tackle after that first round, there are some players that you can target and say, okay, I think he could be a starter for us down the road.
Yeah, I do wonder if that's where Miami goes, because of what I talked about earlier with the it's nice to be in a position where like you kind of have the need, but for now, like tomorrow, you can play a game, especially when you do have Kendall Lamb and Jack Driscoll and all these backups that have given you quality reps, you know, at tackle or guard or otherwise in the league so far. So, Dane, we're going to come back on the other side here. I want to get to your mock draft for the Dolphins and just kind of ask you for a couple of deep round sleepers. That's why I say like the scouts make their money, right? On day three and in the UDFA priority guys. We're going to talk about all that next. My guest today from The Athletic, Dane Brugler, Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Back here with my guest today from The Athletic, The Beast just dropped the greatest draft guide there is out there right now. Go check it out on The Athletic. Dane Brugler talking about the offensive tackle class and how the Dolphins might dip their toe into that water. And you gave me a bunch of great names in the middle rounds there. But if the Dolphins keep the status quo and do not move draft picks around, we will not have a chance to see most of the guys most likely. So 158 is the first pick they have outside of the first two rounds. Then again, 184, 198, 241. Dane, you're an area scout for the Miami Dolphins in this hypothetical, and you have to pound the table for a guy that you think we should take on day three, or a guy that goes undrafted and you think has a chance, like you talked about with the previous guy, a couple of guys there, 2 or 3 years down the road, they could be hits in your lineup down the road. Who are a couple of those guys for you, Dane?
Well, I'll stick with who I mocked with to the Dolphins in my 7-round mock draft on The Athletic. In the 5th round, I had him going with Christian Boyd, Northern Iowa defensive tackle, 6'2.5", 330 pounds. He dealt with an injury, and so he had to push his pro day back and wasn't 100% just yet. But when you have a guy that's just naturally stout like he is, you can line him up in the middle as kind of that nose, but he can be interchangeable because there is more pass rush potential in him than I think what he put on tape. So you have got a guy that's stout. He's going to hold up versus a run, but then give you a little bit extra because he is a pretty decent athlete for that size. And we're talking about a 5th round price tag. I think he's in that mix to be one of the first 2 or 3 non-combine guys drafted. You know, there's plenty of love around for him around the league. And then in the 6th round, I had them going with a really interesting corner from Colorado State, Chigozie Onuosim. He's a Cal transfer. He only 1 career interception. And I know that was something that, you want ball production when it comes to corners, but you also want 6'1", 200 pounds, with 4.3 speed, really good tester, and it shows up on his film, the athlete that he is. He's a player that, again, the ball production is going to really bother you if you're looking to draft a player like this, but we're talking 6th round. And so height, weight, speed, give me a guy that stays attached with his coverage. He can play man. He can play zone. Just a guy that is he's a quality tackler as well. So there's a lot of things I like about this player as another non-combine guy who I think has a good chance to get drafted late.
We have to come back to the first 2 picks in this mock draft because we want to go ahead and keep all the guys that are casual draft fans with us here and not get too deep into the weeds. I love the additions you made there on day three there. I was going to say days 2 and 3, but it's just day 3. But I want to hear about the guys at the top of your mock draft here, which is Leiatu Latu from UCLA and Jatavion Sanders, the tight end from Texas. I'm just curious about how you feel those guys would fit into the Dolphins if they wind up being the picks come draft night.
Yeah, obviously when you look at the Dolphins depth chart, they've invested in the edge rush position, but with injuries and I don't think you're ever done building on the edge on the edges. You want guys that can help create disruption. The more you can add, the more you can give your other guys rest. And so I don't think it'd be surprising if they went that direction in the 1st round. And especially a player that, is very similar to Jalen Phillips. And when talk about his journey and with the medicals and all that, Leiatu Latu is not, in terms of size and speed, he's not something that, he's not superhuman in those areas. But where he does stand out is his pass rush savvy. He understands how to use his hands, the timing, the moves, the transitions. A lot of guys coming from the college level, they're used to being bigger, stronger, faster, and they have never really had to hone in on the technical aspects of playing the position, where Latu, that's where he shines. He's not deficient in terms of his size and athleticism. It's just his technical know-how and the understanding of how to break down the rhythm of blockers, that's where he really stands out. So, and it's the last 2 years, and he was stayed healthy, so I think that, you take that as a positive. Even though he had the medical situation at Washington, he stayed healthy the last 2 years at UCLA. As long as the doctors give him 2 thumbs up, you're looking at this guy as someone's going to come in and help contribute from day one, and someone that's going to make your defense better. So Latu, if he's still on the board, I mean, he might very well, you look at the Rams at 19 and several teams, I think in the top 20, will have him on the short list of players they're looking at.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where he winds up going. Because for you, like you talk about, the Senior Bowl too, like what a display of just pass rush arsenal he was able to flash at those guys and really undress a lot of those tackles in those practices. At DP Brugler on social, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic, The Beast out now, which comes with your subscription for The Athletic, all of Dane's work as well. Do not miss that. Dane, you're the man. Thank you for your time, and go tend to that grass, my friend.
I appreciate it, man. Anytime.
And away he goes. Let's go ahead and take another break right there. Come back on the other side and get to my friend Dante Colonnelli to talk about the interior offensive line for the Dolphins in the 2024 NFL Draft, which is now just 6 days away. That's next. Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. We've done the tackles, and now it's time to kick inside and do that. To do that, I should say, we welcome in friend of the show, Temple Tough Grad. He works for the 33rd team and covers your Miami Dolphins at Fan Nation and at Dolphins Talk, written and podcast forms there. Dante Colonnelli. Dante, slow down all the jobs, man. You're making us all look bad out here. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. A busy guy, but really happy to be here, man. I love talking Dolphins football with you.
I was always curious to ask you because I remember following your career as you were doing work for Temple when you went to school there. Just curious in the jump from Temple and covering that level of football to now covering the NFL. Like, what's that like for you?
Oh, man, it's a lot different. It's a lot different, right? Like when you're and, you know this now, right? Like when you're on a beat, that one team is your life, right? You go everywhere they go. You travel to the games, you go to the practices. You know, I remember like standing outside in the hail to watch practice, right? At Temple, stuff like that. You know, now my main job is covering the entire league. And obviously I also cover the Dolphins, as you mentioned, but it's a lot different. I kind of just, you have to follow 32 teams instead of just the one. So it's a big change, but man, I love it. There's just nothing like NFL football. You know, I love college football. I love the draft, obviously, but it's a dream come true to cover the NFL, man. So I'm enjoying it, soaking it up.
I've been noticing that with basketball. Like I used to be a bigger college basketball fan, but now I prefer the NBA by a long shot. And like, when I go back to watch the tournament every year, I'm like, oh yeah, there is a pretty big drop off in skill level here from NFL or from NBA to college basketball. And same way in the NFL as well there. And would you be surprised to hear that we actually had a hailstorm here? I think, was it last year? At some point in the year, we had hail in South Florida. Yeah. It was like wow. Very minimal, but someone's like, one of my wife's, co-workers got their car got hit by a big piece of hail. Hey man, crazy times we're living in. Besides the fact of weather and Temple life, all that stuff, we wanted to get Dante on today to talk about the offensive line class. We did tackles right before this, and as you can imagine, there is some crossover there between tackles and guards. And so let's go ahead and start with this, Dante, because I've seen it mentioned. You know, Troy Fatanu, who is, for my money, I think he's the best offensive lineman in the entire class. I'm curious to get your take on that. Talisi Fuaga, these guys are players that have been projected to play either tackle or guard. No one seems to agree on where Graham Barton might play. I'm curious, tell me where you place some of these guys that have that fringe ability, and how do you think teams should view it in terms of, you know, we're taking this guy in the first round, and to hit on a tackle is more valuable than to hit on a guard, right? I'm curious how you think teams might have those discussions about, well, yeah, he can play guard, but ideally tackle's the best spot for him.
Yeah, so it's really tough, right? Fatanu specifically is the toughest one for me, because if you had asked me that question before the combine, I would have said guard, no question. And that wasn't meant to be a slight at him. It's just, hey, I like my guards to be road graders, these really aggressive guys, these guys who like, you know, moving people off the line of scrimmage. And that's all Troy Fontenot's film is at Washington. It's just him beating defensive linemen up, moving them off the ball. But you watch him at the combine and he just looks phenomenal moving around. And his arm length was actually a lot better than I was expecting. He came in with 34 and a half inch arms, which is 67th percentile among offensive tackles since 1999, which is like well above average. So that was a pleasant surprise. And then, you know, you go back and you watch his tape and you're like, all right, maybe this guy is a tackle, right? He moves well. He's got the footwork, the arm length, checks the box, 90th percentile jumps at the combine as well. He's really explosive. So Fontenot for me, I'll probably end up ranking him as a guard just because that's where I've had him. And I have him as the top rated interior player in this class, period. I have a first round grade on him. I think he's a really good football player. Fuaga, I have a tackle. I think he's too big to play guard. Like, I think he's too tall. I like my guards to have a little bit more leverage on the interior, right? So when you compare him to Fontenot, who's 6'3", I think Fuaga's like pushing 6'6". I think he's at least 6'5". So, I like my guards to have a little bit more leverage on the interior. That's a really like old school-ish approach to that position, but I don't know. I like Fuaga at tackle. Barton's an interesting one because he played 3 years of left tackle at Duke. I like him at center. I think that's his best position. He can play guard for you if you need him to. He can play tackle in a pinch. I'm a little bit more worried about Barton's ability to anchor against speed to power rushers in the NFL. I think he's got the athleticism. He tested really well. He ran well at his combine or at his pro day, sorry. So he's got the athleticism to play tackle. I worry about his ability to just like getting these long, you know, these like long power rushers into his chest at the NFL level. There's a lot of those guys. And I don't know if I love him on the outside there. On the interior, I think you make the most of his movement skills. He's another guy that has that really aggressive mentality, which I really like on the interior. I went back and watched his center tape when he was a freshman at Duke. He played, I think it was like 5 games at center. I think he made 4 starts. It might have been 5 starts and 6 games. He looks good. Like that center tape is solid. And that's as a freshman, as a 3-star recruit, not a 5-star recruit. Wasn't expected to play right away. He looks good. So I would have Barton at center. I think Fuaga is a tackle. Fontenelle, for me, I think he's probably the guy that might be able to do both. And I think for Miami particularly, that's important given what other pieces they have up front.
Exactly right. Like I cannot watch him and not come away thinking like, this is a Laramie Tunsil, like year one left guard, kick him out to left tackle here. And, you know, you mentioned Barton and the ability to play inside. Like, I just feel like the Dolphins and the Niners are in this group, the Packers, the teams that run that similar, you know, want to stretch things out wide in the zone game. That center position becomes a little more valuable for teams like Miami or San Francisco or Green Bay because of just the expansion of the playbook that a player like that gives you. And we talked about Connor Williams last year with how he did that for Miami. Aaron Brewer provides that for the Miami Dolphins this year as well. So very intriguing there. You know, Jackson Powers Johnson, Zach Frazier, all these guys that could possibly be in that range for Miami. I'm just curious, is there anybody at guard or center that you think is worth or should be in consideration for the 21st pick? Is it a trade down scenario? Just kind of how do you view the interior O-line with Miami and that 21st pick?
Yeah, so I think for me, I probably would not take any of the pure interior players at 21. So if you want to take Troy Fontenelle at 21 and you want to say, hey, he's our guard this year, and like you said, he's going to kick out when Teron Armstead retires, I'm all aboard, you know, put me on the train. Like, let's go. That's great. Any of the pure interior guys, I wouldn't take at 21. It's not that I don't like them, right? Like, I have high grades on Barton. I have high grades on Zach Frazier. The high grade on Jackson Powers Johnson. You pay Aaron Brewer enough money to be your starting center in free agency, you're going to have to position switch one of those guys, or you're going to have to put Brewer back at guard. And frankly, I just think Brewer has done a better job at center, right? Like, I think that seems like a more natural position for him. So you got to play musical chairs. I like what you said there at the end about a trade back, right? If you move back to, I don't know, 29, 27, 28, you get an extra day 2 pick, you select Jackson Powers Johnson, and you know what? He's got the size to play guard in year one. We're going to make that position switch. We're going to put Aaron Brewer at center, and we're going to go from there, right? That makes a lot more sense to me. But at 21, I have a hard time, especially for the Dolphins specifically, thinking that they are going to value that position that high. I don't know that they will, right? Like, I think center is very important to them, but you can get Zach Frazier in a trade back. You can look at pick 55 and you can attack some of the other guys that we'll get to, right? Like, I think that there's value if guard is really important to you, right? You want to replace the right guard spot where Robert Hunt, you know, he left, right? There's guys that you can look at pick 55 who I think are going to be on the board to do that. So I really think that they should try to maximize this O-line as much as possible. I think when you're a team like the Dolphins, who is clearly a good football team, clearly a team that's going to win, compete for the playoffs, they're trying to take that next step, right? To me, like, this is an opportunity on the offensive line to improve on the fringes and really open up the playbook even more. But I think at 21, if you're going to do that, to me, it's got to be a tackle of the future who's going to play guard for a year and kick out, right? So I would not take the interior guys at 21. In a trade back, sure, you can talk me into a lot of guys.
And that's why I think the Dolphins offseason, and not just on the offensive line, was so productive because of how they were able to round out these, you know, perceived needs that they had, to where they can really put themselves in position to say, we can just take the best football player and we can figure out where his fit is at the end of the day. Like, not in the system, you know, he's going to fit the system because you don't take a player that doesn't fit your system. But in terms of where he might have the quickest path to playing time, like, I look, you'd mentioned Aaron Brewer's addition at center. Like, I like him at that position so much. I think it's where he's the best by far. And his ability to get out in space tracks back to what we talked about with Connor Williams and Jackson Powers Johnson, all those guys that add value at that position. But I think there's value in how the Dolphins built this thing, because, you know, Jack Driscoll's played guard and tackle. We mentioned Brewer's played center and guard. All these guys they've brought in have played multiple spots. And so they kind of have this versatility that allows them to, okay, well, you can play here, but you can play there as well. So we have options with how that works out. And this class seems to have that as well, with guys that play multiple spots. And on top of all that, when you have a system like that, it gives guys opportunities to fail at a spot and then go somewhere else and be successful there too. So I like all those reasons to go after the offensive line. I want to come back to what you talked about there at pick 55, because I've done a million mock drafts the last couple of weeks. I'm proud of myself. I held off for a long time before I got into them. But one of the things I noticed in doing them was that 55th pick, sometimes like a lot of the guys that I wanted were off the board by the time I got there. But there was one guy that was typically there that I like a lot. I want to hear the names that you like in that spot and who you expect to be available for Miami at 55.
Yeah, it's a really good point, right? Like, I think a lot of people talk about 55. They're like, oh, it's right outside the top 50. There will definitely be a good guy there. And it's like,
Sometimes not always.
There isn't, and that's unfortunate. So there's three guys that stick out to me who could be there on the interior, and I have them like stacked right on top of each other on my board in typical draft analyst fashion. Imagine having a hot take. Dominic Pooney, Christian Hayes, Cooper Beebe would be the three guys that I would highlight. So Dominic Pooney from Kansas, he is another guy who played tackle for them, but he also has experience at guard. They kicked him out to tackle this year. I'm wildly impressed with his Senior Bowl. Didn't even know he existed until he went to the Senior Bowl. He was great there. And then, you know, when you watch the Senior Bowl and you see a guy perform like that, you just run straight to the tape. And I was honestly so impressed with Pooney. I've got a pretty solid second round grade on him. He's got the power, athleticism. I think he's got the size. I think he's a guard. I don't think he should play tackle. I'm a little bit worried about his ability to just defend high side rushes. And I don't like messing with that at tackles at the NFL level. It scares me. Christian Haynes from UConn, really athletic, experienced. He's like, to me, he's a plug and play right guard. I don't know that he's going to have like the ceiling necessarily be like an all pro or whatever, but like, just, I think you plug him in at right guard and you just forget about him for a couple of years. He's really solid, agile, athletic, pass protector, has the athleticism to match some of these like quicker interior guys that we're getting into the league. Like interior defensive linemen, they're getting quick every year. These guys are getting thinner and faster, right? Like I want like the Christian Haynes of the world who can do that. And then also they have that mentality I was talking about earlier, right? Like Haynes likes to hit people. He likes to move people off the line of scrimmage. Like I want that in my interior guys, but he's got the athleticism back it up, right? And to me, that's what the prototype starting guard is in the NFL these days. You got to be able to do both. You can't just be a mauler on the inside anymore. And then Cooper Beebe is just like, he's just solid. Every rep's the same. It's just out of his stance, perfect hand placement, push the guy out, you know, a little bit, a little angle, running back goes right off his butt, 5 yard gain. It just rinse, repeat every play. So I really like Cooper Beebe. I think he's like a technician, man. Like he knows what he's doing. He's played a million college football snaps at this point. He's been a starter at Kansas State forever. I think that's the type of player too, that I think somebody like Mike McDaniel might really gravitate towards, just because maybe he doesn't have the elite athleticism that the Dolphins really, really like up front, but I think he's a good mover. I don't think he's a limited player by any stretch, but he's going to go out there and he's going to run the scheme that you want to run. He can do a lot of different things for you. He can do the inside stuff, you know, the inside zone stuff, the outside zone stuff. The Dolphins, once in a while, they like to dabble in those gap power type stuff. I think BB can do that for you as well. So those would be three guys I would target at 55. But like you mentioned, offensive line, you know, guard is becoming like low-key a premium position across the league. We just saw guards get paid, you know, a buku bucks this offseason. Rogron obviously got a ton of money to go to the Panthers, right? So guards becoming a premium position, it's not smart to just sit there at 55 and be like, oh, we're definitely going to get one of those guys. But I think one of those three guys could be there at 55 would be a smart pick.
Especially when I look at this offensive line, like I just feel like there's one more piece. Just give me one more good piece that I feel good about, and I'll go into the season feeling really good about that, and we'll see what happens here. But it kind of sounds like, you know, between 21 and 55, it almost feels like it's in the middle of there somewhere, like a trade back or a trade up in either direction. It kind of feels that's the way you kind of have to do it here. But you never know. We'll find out, because the draft never, ever goes how you plan. And it'll go by one time. And if you did it again, it probably go by in a different order, in a different fashion that way as well. So it's like these mock drafts, but you have one official one that actually goes off and takes place. And that's the one that counts. And to your points there on those three guys. So Pooney, I remember talking to Daniel Jeremiah, you know, name drop, on the on his conference call back when he did his first one before the combine, and I asked him about who are some players that you think what skill sets translate as guys that play tackle but can also kick inside to guard, and he mentioned Dominic Pooney is one of those guys. Even took some reps at center, if I'm not mistaken, I think in Mobile, I believe that was where I heard that from. And then you mentioned Christian Haynes. Like, explosive blocks out to the numbers, man. The way he buries DBs, I love that stuff on tape. And then BB, the set and forget, like you sold me on that too, because all those skill sets sound very intriguing. And I'll ask you for one more question here to go deep into your bag, Dante, if you can, and get really deep into the third day of the draft. Because if Miami does not move and shuffle and go up and down the draft board, we're going to have a 103 pick gap between Dolphins in the second round and in the fifth round, pick 55 to 158. Who are some guys that you think could hear their name called on day number three and be NFL contributors?
Yeah. So there's one name that I think people know, but might've forgotten about, Zach Zinter from Michigan. He was probably a day two pick for a lot of the year. He broke his leg in the Ohio State game, so he hasn't been able to do much, but he decided to come out. I think depending on how far he falls will obviously be about medicals, right? How are you recovering from that broken leg? We've seen Zach Frazier already recover from a broken leg. Everything I've read about Zinter is that he's on track. And so he's a guy that I think honestly could be there in the fifth round just because I don't think he's going to play right away. But if you're the Dolphins, I think you get a chance to take a future starting guard in the fifth round. And look, when you're in the day three, it's you're throwing darts at guys, right? And to me, like, Zinter has the power, the size, the mass to be a starting guard. Now, I think where you run into some problems for his fit with Miami, not the best athlete in the world. I don't think he's like this elite mover. But again, you're on day three. If you sit down and you're like, all right, look, this guy can start a guard for us in a pinch. You know, maybe he's our, like, you know, swing guard, if you will, right? You teach him to play both spots. He's your primary backup there. That's a valuable piece. The other one I would highlight is Mason McCormick from South Dakota State. I just, like, I'll be honest, like, I'll get into the traits here. The aesthetic is phenomenal. The dude looks, he plays, he's got the neck roll, he's got the hair, South Dakota State. He, you know, his whole tape is him just running over FCS players. Like, it's awesome. Dude looks, plays like a starting guard. But traits wise, I think, you know, you like the movement skills, you like the power, you like the mentality. I think that he's a developmental player. I think you got some things in pass protection that you're going to have to work out for him. I don't know that he's got necessarily, right, like his foot and hand timing, right? How good is that? How good are the level of competition that he faced at the FCS level? That's a big kick up to the NFL. We've seen some FCS offensive linemen like struggle with that a little bit in recent years. You know, obviously you want to scout each individual player. You don't want a helmet scout, or in this case, league to subdivision scout. That's a new one. But at the same time, like, I really like McCormick. I don't know that he'll be there in the fifth round, but with small school guys, especially now, you don't know, right? So many of them go back to school. He doesn't have a ton of hype, but I like him. I think he's a good athlete. The other one, the last one I'll highlight here, Bo Limmer from Arkansas, pure center, really good run blocker. I think he can do a lot for you in a zone scheme. He could go higher than this. I like the movement skills. I like the experience there. Ricky Stromberg was drafted by the Commanders last year. Limmer played guard and then kicked into center after Stromberg left. Couple years of good film for him. I think he could be a day three guy. Another guy I worry about in pass protection a little bit. Didn't love how he anchored. Didn't love necessarily how he dealt with counters. A lot of these guys are great when everyone's just pushing them, but at the NFL level, you get those defensive linemen who have, you know, a few tricks up their sleeve because they're the best in the world, right? And so Limmer needs some development there, but I think you have the bones of a contributing solid interior player. So those would be the three that stand out to me. I like this interior O-line class. I think the Dolphins, you know, like we said, maybe it's not perfect at 21. Maybe it's not perfect at 55, but I'd like them to invest in this group somewhere. I think there's a lot of players who are going to contribute either as starters. I don't know that there's like a star. I don't know that we're going to get like a Quentin Nelson, Zach Martin type player in this group. But to me, a lot of really good football players. And the Dolphins have done a nice job addressing the offensive line. There's no doubt about that. Like you said, feel like they could use just maybe one more piece to really push that group to the next level.
And if you get it here and you hit here and you saw Robert Hunt go get paid, congrats, big man, get your money. Like, you earned that bag. You played great for us for 4 years. If you can get it here, the savings on a rookie contract versus $20 million per year for a guard, like, that is a great way to do business, a great way to give yourself extra starters with that money you save in the interim. So great stuff there, Dante. Find him at the 33rd Team, Fan Nation, and Dolphins Talk at Dante Colonelli on Twitter. Dante, appreciate your time today, man. You made us smarter.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I love doing this every year.
And there he goes, and there we go with the offensive line class. We have one more of these to go. It'll be on Monday, taking a look at linebackers and tight ends, and then the draft extravaganza preview two-part episode, as we do every single year with the great Kyle Krabs, coming your way on Tuesday and Wednesday ahead of the Thursday, I guess, Friday morning podcast, recapping the first round for your Miami Dolphins. Busy, busy times ahead here on the show. That's going to be my time today, though. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from. Go ahead and leave us a rating, leave us a review. You can follow me on social at Wingfield NFL and the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with my guys Seth and Juice. And we're going to be at Pier 5 on draft night, hosting a radio show and a live panel for the draft for your Miami Dolphins draft party. So don't miss that on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Plus, YouTube channel for the availabilities, Dolphins Today, and so much more. And last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up, Carolina Cameron, Daddy.